Perplexed in great difficulties. Vishapanena, by drinking poison. Nikriya, subduing. Pujagad adipam, the chief of the reptiles. Utapya, after coming out. Abhayayat, forced to drink. Gavaha, the cows. Tat, that. Toyam, water. Prakriti, natural. Stitam, situated. Translation. The inhabitants of Vrindavan were perplexed by great difficulties because a certain portion of the Yamuna was poisoned by the chief of the reptiles, Kaliya. The Lord had chastised the snake king within the water and drove him away, and after coming out of the river, he caused the cows to drink the water and prove that the water was again in its natural state. Text number 32. Ayaja vayago save na gopara janji dvijo tamai vitasya charubharasya chikesam savyayam vibhu. The Supreme Lord Krishna desired to utilize the opulent financial strength of Nanda Maharaj for worshipping the cows, for worship of the cows, and also he wanted to give a lesson to Indra, the king of heaven. Thus he advised his father to perform worship of Go, or the pasturing land and the cows, with the help of learned brahmanas. Purport. Since he is the teacher of everyone, the Lord also taught his father, Nanda Maharaj. Nanda Maharaj was a well-to-do landholder and owner of many cows, and as was the custom, he used to perform yearly worship of Indra, the king of heaven, with great opulence. This worship of demigods by the general populace is also advised in the Vedic literature, just so people can accept the superior power of the Lord, that the demigods are servants of the Lord, deputed to look after the management of various activities of universal affairs. Therefore, it is advised in the Vedic scriptures that one should perform yajnas to appease the demigods. But one who is devoted to the Supreme Lord has no need to appease the demigods. Worship of the demigods by common people is an arrangement for acknowledging the supremacy of the Supreme Lord, but it is not necessary. Such appeasement is generally recommended for material gains only. As we have already discussed in the second canto of this literature, one who admits the supremacy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead does not need to worship the secondary demigods. Sometimes, being worshipped and adored by less intelligent living beings, the demigods become puffed up with power and forget the supremacy of the Lord. This happened when Lord Krishna was present in the universe, and thus the Lord wanted to give a lesson to the King of Heaven, Indra. He therefore asked Maharaj Nanda to stop the sacrifice offered to Indra and to use the money properly by performing a ceremony worshipping the cows in the pasturing ground on the hill of Govardhan. By this act, Lord Krishna taught human society, as he has instructed in Bhagavad Gita also, that one should worship the Supreme Lord by all acts and by all their results. That will bring about the desired success. Vaishyas are specifically advised to give protection to the cows and their pasturing ground or agricultural land instead of squandering their hard-earned money. That will satisfy the Lord. The perfection of one's occupational duty, whether in the sphere of duty to oneself, one's community, or one's nation, is judged by the degree to which the Lord is satisfied. Mukam karoti vachalam pangum langayate girinya kripata maham vande shivarindinatarinam pancha kalpa trivishtra kripasam divya eva chalapatitanam parmibya vaishnavibya namo namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Sarivaro Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Okay, so we're towards the last verses of this chapter, this conversation. Vidura hearing about the pastimes of the Lord from Uddhava. Uddhava has been caught in remembrance of the Lord's pastimes in Vrindavan. So there's been a great detail explaining the potency of Krishna Smarana. And glorification, of course, of the devotee who is always engaged in thinking of Krishna. And in this particular example, we're hearing about Vidura and how even Vidura in his childhood stage, he would be so absorbed in the pastimes of Krishna that he wouldn't even want to eat, or he wouldn't respond to the calling of his parents or any of his friends, but he was just engaged in playing games about Krishna or repeating pastimes about Krishna. So he had a natural taste from the very time of his birth to hearing about the pastimes of Krishna. Whereas those who are not conversant with, of course, a more religious upbringing or a pious or an auspicious upbringing are averse to these topics regarding the Supreme Personality of Godhead being the maintainer and the most opulent personality. No one equal to him and no one is above him. He is the supreme enjoyer, and everyone else is to be enjoyed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So earlier on we heard how those who are bewildered by these pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan, even these pastimes of Krishna in Dwarka, Srila Prabhupada explains them, of course, using Krishna's words in Bhagavad Gita, as those with a poor fund of knowledge. So earlier on, Prabhupada quoted Bhagavad Gita 9:11, Avajananti man mudha manushum tanun ashutam parampavam ajananto mama bhuta maheshwaram. That those persons who are with a poor fund of knowledge, this is, of course, summarizing the verse, they belittle the personality of Godhead, not knowing him to be exalted, even though he might appear in this material universe. He still appears in his original transcendental form. And therefore, even when he appears, his dham or his abode comes with him, his devotees come with him, the holy name comes with him, and so much paraphernalia is also coming with him, which is also on the transcendental platform. So from a materialistic vision or a vision covered by the three modes of material nature, it is difficult for persons to actually see Krishna as being above the modes of material nature, especially with these special pastimes that he was portraying in Vrindavan. So text 31 took us back to the pastime where Krishna was dancing on the hood of the serpent king Kaliya. And with that pastime, of course, in Krishna book, Srila Prabhupada is explaining how the residents of Vrindavan were so perplexed and they were caught up in so much anxiety, thinking that Krishna is wrapped around the coils of this Kaliya serpent. And it is because of the serpent that the sweet waters of the Yamuna, which were one of the main spots for Krishna's intimate pastimes, had become contaminated because of this serpent king. So the residents of Vrindavan were in a lot of anxiety, especially seeing Krishna coiled up by Kaliya. And it was at that point, according to Srila Prabhupada, that when Krishna saw the fear and the anxiety in the hearts of his pure devotees, that he decided to get rid of Kaliya and ease their pain and ease their anxiety. So once again, Krishna is showing his reciprocation with his devotees' love, not wanting, of course, to distress them, but churning the highest form of affection between Krishna and his pure devotees. So even in this pastime of Kaliya, after Krishna uncoiled himself, of course, danced on the hoods of the serpent, and not only pacified his devotee, but also pacified Kaliya, purified Kaliya. And of course, the Nagapatnis, the wives of Kaliya, offered wonderful prayers to Lord Krishna, explaining his wonderful opulence in Vrindavan, glorifying his devotees. And eventually, after that, the Lord allowed them to leave the sacred river Yamuna and gave them another place to go and reside. And immediately, the Lord, with his mystic potency, of course, allowed those waters of the Yamuna to go back to their original state. And he invited the cows and the calves to partake of the sweet waters of the Yamuna. So, Krishna once again making sure that his devotees or those who accept him in loving affection are always cared for and they're always protected. So different pastimes, whether it was the killing of Dhenikasura, Shakatasura or Putana, all these different pastimes are showing the different rasas that are being churned, not only between Krishna and his loving devotees, but also with those personalities who are trying to kill the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Of course, not understanding that the Supreme Lord is the supreme dominant person. He is Purushottama. He is beyond all supremacy. No one is equal or greater than him. So these pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan, when one remembers them, we're reminded about the strength of the Lord, the qualities of Krishna, how Krishna is expert, how Krishna is the best use, is the best at judging how to reciprocate according to time, place, and circumstance. So we see all these attributes coming out from one pastime to the other. How Krishna is Bhaktavatsala, how Krishna is Achyuta, how Krishna is Parthasarathi. So many different wonderful ways we see the personality of Krishna coming out in the pastimes. And when one sees this, one won't become attracted to getting any type of material gain or material benefits by worshipping demigods. So in the text 32, Srila Prabhupada puts a lot of emphasis explaining the relevance of demigod worship, giving the full spectrum, of course. In the Vedic literatures, there are sections that specifically deal with worship of the different devatas, whether it's Lakshmi, Ganesh, or Lord Shiva. Different devatas are worshipped in a particular way. As Prabhupada says here, they are appeased by the worshippers so that the worshippers themselves are getting a material benefit. Srila Prabhupada, of course, explains that this worship was meant for the general populace, of course, based on a certain section of the Vedic literature, so that over time, people gradually start to accept a supremacy or authority, and ultimately the superior power of the Lord. This was, demigod worship was performed in such a way that gradually the worshippers themselves start seeing the supremacy not only of the devatas, but also of the master of the demigods, the Supreme Lord himself. And great knowledge is given in Srila Prabhupada's purports about who and what the demigods are and what their role is in this material cosmos. So the normal example Srila Prabhupada gives explains that the demigods, they are servants of the Lord, of course, and they are deputed to look after the managemental affairs of the material cosmos. So they are empowered by Krishna. They're special living entities that are given posts to take care or to manage certain aspect of material existence. understanding, of course, that they also have a master, and all these yajnas that are being performed, ultimately it is for the pleasure of Vishnu. Yajna is Vishnu. So Krishna, Lord Vishnu, the name used interchangeably sometimes by Srila Prabhupada, is to whom all worship should be given to. He is the the maintainer. He is Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. So he's not only maintaining all the different universes, planetary systems, also the devatas, he's their maintainers. So when one is devoted to the Supreme Lord, however, one is not really attracted, or it is not necessary for one to try to appease the demigods and worship them to get a material benefit. What is recommended, of course, as Prabhupada said, it has been elaborately discussed in the second canto, that one need not worship demigods. That is done by those who are extremely less intelligent, not knowing that there is the Supreme Lord, who is even more powerful than the demigods, that we should focus our attention on worshipping Krishna directly through, of course, the Acharya-Vigraha form by the process of devotional service. Now, to point this out, Srila Prabhupada just mentions the Govardhan pastime, where Krishna himself approached his father, who was following a certain aspect of Vedic literature, by offering sacrifice to Lord Indra, the king of heaven, for providing sufficient rain and fertile land so that they can continue as Vaishyas to maintain the land and protect the cows. Krishna approached him, and there's a wonderful, in the Krishna book, the chapter is wonderfully explained by Srila Prabhupada, how Krishna very simply and wonderfully convinced Nanda Maharaj that actually worship should be done towards Govardhan Hill, because Govardhan Hill is providing everything for the inhabitants of Vrindavan. So Nanda Maharaj was impressed and appeased by this argument, and this is what they do. This is what happened when Lord Krishna was present in the universe. He was still teaching the inhabitants of Vrindavan, teaching his own father the proper method of trying to attain perfection, and that is to directly offer worship to the Supreme Lord and not indirectly do that by trying to appease the demigods. So, Srila Prabhupada mentioned that this mode of worship, by going to the root source of everything, the source of all opulence, the source of all pleasure, that will bring about the desired success for the living entity. And Srila Prabhupada also closes the purport very nicely by saying, the perfection of one's occupational duty, whether in the sphere of duty to oneself, one's community, or one's nation, is judged by the degree to which the Lord is satisfied. So all our actions, whether it is on an individual or communal basis, our philanthropic work, etc., this all depends, of course, to the degree by which the Lord is satisfied. So all our actions are meant to be guided by Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, to make sure that at the end the result will be pleasing to Krishna. Not that we manufacture our own means and ways to try to attain perfection or to alleviate ignorance. There's already a process given to remove the false ego tendency. There's the bhakti process itself is like a grinding mortar. The more you perform devotional service, the more the false ego gets eliminated from one's consciousness. Identification with matter and the products of matter is gradually diminished. And this is necessary because this material identification, or this external identification, is what separates one by putting oneself in the material energy, or connecting one to Krishna's internal energy, which is the superior energy. The natural proclivity that we should be in is the spiritual potency. But when we are covered over by this ignorance and the false conception of the self, it is very difficult to just appreciate Krishna's divine energy, Krishna's internal pleasure potency. We can't appreciate it and we take it for granted. So it is important that we make this distinction specifically, maybe not so much those who are coming from a Western background, we didn't have much understanding or knowledge of demigod worship. But those maybe coming from Eastern Asia are more in tune with the different methods of demigod worship. Is that true? In India, most of you, did you all come from a background where you were worshipping some demigod at home? Or 5 or 10? Like, I've been in some houses, there's rooms with everyone in it. And Jesus is also there. There's Buddha. So in the morning you do your puja, you make sure you cover everyone. And there's little Ladu Gopal or whatever. So in Eastern Asian countries, this is more visible and it's more understood. And sometimes it makes it difficult for persons coming from that scene to grasp the supremacy of one, just Krishna. Everything you want, whether you're, as Krishna says, whether you're full of material desires, whether you have no desires, or whether you want liberation, just worship Krishna. So in any state, we should just understand that the supreme person to be worshipped or to take shelter of is one, and that is Krishna. So that is there in Bhagavad Gita, it is there in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is there in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that there's only one Ishvara, Ekala Ishvara Krishna, Ara Sabha Pritya, and everyone else is a servant of that Ishvara, of that Krishna. So when we have this understanding, we won't become so... And this understanding, of course, should come with the right type of association. It should come with the right type of knowledge, not just superficially understanding, oh, Krishna, hey, Bhagavan, or, you know, he is, oh, Gopala Krishna Murari, we listen to such and such bhajan, therefore we accept. But it has to be a firm conviction within our consciousness, within our heart, that only Krishna actually should be accepted as the Supreme Personality. Our faith should increase over time. We should seek out knowledge and information that will teach us about this Ishvara principle, that will teach us about Krishna's tattva, that yes, he is the absolute truth, and there's three bona fide ways of trying to realize it, where Srimad Bhagavatam focuses specifically on understanding which one is the topmost, the Bhagavan aspect, simultaneously giving us information about the Paramatma and the Brahman understanding of the absolute truth. So all these components are necessary to give us a full, healthy understanding of a spiritual reality. And in that way, we won't become flaky in our understanding. We won't become enamored, maybe by a worship of Durga Devi or worship of Lakshmi. And we have our little secret puja, and then we come to the temple, but we have our little secret puja. Our faith should be strong in Krishna. Because when we do that, it's like having one foot on a boat and the other foot on land. You can't live a proper balanced life like that. It's not possible to be content fully when you have one foot there and the other foot on the other side, trying to enjoy the best of both worlds. It is not possible. You're either accepting Krishna full-heartedly or you're cheating and trying to accept other things on the side. Because Krishna is all-pervasive as Paramatma. Krishna is all-pervasive. He understands our motives. He sees our sincerity and he reciprocates accordingly. He says this in Bhagavad Gita. He will reciprocate accordingly with our devotion, with our bhakti. So in Western countries, of course, we have our... we always try to appease our demigods, the sports stars, the movie stars, the super athletes. You know, we have their know, starting from being a young child, you have pictures of your favorite demigod or demigoddess on the wall, whether it's, you know, Shilpa Shetty, or there's Shah Rukh Khan, and then you have or something Moody, or whatever they go by these names.
Moody.
Or you have your Brad Pitt and your Angelina Jolie, Iggy Azalea. So these are, you know, in the Western world, these are seen as, you know, the crown jewel, the manifestations of, you know, rasa, material rasa. So people worship such personalities. They perform, you know, intense sacrifices to hear from them, right? Life was simple when apple and blackberry were just fruits. Life was very, very simple. And then now apple and blackberry, it's phones. Now life is very complicated. But when the Apple phone, I think it's the Apple, what do they call it, 6? iPhone 6 was coming out. You see the queue. You can just go on the internet and see what people were doing around the world just to get that, right? Or whatever it is, the latest, you know, if you go to Crossways, Hi-Fi Bar, the latest, you know, rock band coming on the street, you'll see all these young children performing an austerity of standing in line for hours just to go and hear from their, you know, source of nectar. Right, just to go hear that grunge music or to go hear that grunge poetry. All sacrifices are being performed to hear such discussions or to hear such music. So there is a tendency in us to want to hear, to want to subjugate ourselves or to want to offer some type of worship or praise, but it should be done in the right manner, in a guided manner, instead of being attracted to all these material sounds that keep one in the false ego concept or that keep one bound by, you know, the modes of material nature, which diminish all the qualities. They diminish all the good qualities that can be found. Instead of doing that and spreading and enlivening ourselves and those that we meet about the reality of the situation, telling people about Krishna and Krishna's creation and how we fit into it is very, very beneficial. There's so many misinterpretations out there about who Krishna is, about Krishna's creation, why we're here. Just yesterday I was speaking to one girl and she was saying, you know, in the university, she was saying, you know, why should we take things so literally? You know, places, you know, the Bhagavad Gita, it says that, you know, you worship Krishna, you surrender to Krishna. Why should we take it literally? Can't it mean that we do this and that and do it like this and like that? So much speculation can go on, although persons might have some knowledge of Bhagavad Gita. But because it is a material disease, the material disease of wanting to change things to suit our material desires, that has to be cut. So spending time with persons and explaining to them, taking the principle out of Shastra. According to time, place, and circumstance, we take the principle and we put it into application. So we're telling her, you know, the Bhagavad Gita said, you know, one should be silent and one should live in seclusion. And she was arguing, you know, how is this possible? How can you be silent? We're living in a cosmopolitan world. I say the principle is, you know, when you're silent, you only speak about certain subject matters. That is what silence means. You do not go bickering about anything that you see, any nonsensical thing that you hear and see, but you choose your words and you discuss topics that will expand our consciousness and topics that will take us away from just bodily identification, on whether it's mental, physical, hormonal sensations, knowledge that's going to take our consciousness higher. So she was a bit pacified, and then she started asking, what about, you know, we should live in seclusion? And I said, you know, that means you just associate yourself with persons who are of the same mindset, birds of a feather flock together. So you have to live in such a way that your spiritual culture can be exhibited in your everyday life. So live with persons who are interested in that way of thinking, hang out with persons who do that and you'll find it much easier. And from that she accepted to some degree. So also explaining Krishna's words, explaining how Krishna expects us to be in this material world. His guidelines are very, very openly spread in the Bhagavad Gita. But it takes us as individuals to actually sit down with these persons who are covered over by ignorance and a false conception of I and mine, my body, and the expansions of my body belong to me, just to spend time with them and just start the process, engage them in the chanting of the holy name, in honoring prasadam, and in hearing the pastimes of Krishna, the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. And in that way, this tendency to become enamored by material success or material facilities or gains will become less attractive to them. The more they hear about Krishna, that attraction for material gains will diminish. So I'll stop there and I'll ask if there's any comments or questions or additions. Is that a big problem? No flowers will be offered to Lord Shiva.
And if I could tell this Shiva devotees, they will start to accuse me. Sir. You were very angry at least. And even my friend was very angry. I told them, just don't. And they're saying me that this is for people, they always insult these gods and goddess by telling their demigods.
Well, make them conversant with Bhagavad Gita and what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. That, you know, over time, as I mentioned, Prabhupada mentions in this purport that the Vedas, they explain how to actually worship demigods properly in such a way that one eventually realizes that the Supreme Person is Krishna, although they're still guided by worship of demigods. So in the long run, they should come out of it, but we shouldn't fight with them. And at least in this temple, I don't think that anyone has ever degraded those who worship demigods. We're just stating the facts. According to Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, in the Bhagavad Gita, he explains that he makes the faith of one who... He strengthens the faith of one who worships a specific type of demigod, so that over time he grows from just worshipping, whether it's Lord Shiva or Lord Brahma, whoever. Gradually they grow out of it and they develop some devotion for Lord Krishna. So even Krishna himself, he's not deriding them, he's just stating it is an indirect way of trying to attain the absolute truth. Why not just directly approach Krishna? But there will always be persons who are attracted to worship of the demigod because they want material gain. So for them, that facility is given. And it is a protection because at least they're being guided by some form of shastra instead of just whimsically making a deity mental speculation and worshiping themselves. There are guidelines given in the Vedic text about how to do it. At least they're following some authority. So the fact that they accept authority of a demigod will lead them to accept eventually the authority of Krishna. But first they have to get purified of that tendency to want material gain. Because Krishna is not interested in giving us material gain. He's interested in giving us our original, you know, our original position. And that's being his servants unconditionally. So saying that when Prabhupada explains that those who worship demigods are less intelligent, he's just saying they don't realize that they can directly go to the Lord instead of indirectly trying to go through him through demigod worship. And that is less intelligent. If you're intelligent, you will worship Krishna, because that is the fastest means, it's the surest means of success, according to Srila Prabhupada and Bhagavad Gita. So tell your friends not to worry. Just give them the Bhagavad Gita and explain to them that eventually they will come to that point. If they don't want to listen, just offer them prasadam. Don't fight with them. Don't force them. Will Krishna ever be pleased with the worship of Shiva?
Yeah.
With those who worship Lord Shiva? I don't want to speculate. I'll say what I know. I know the service that Lord Shiva performs is to try to liberate and guide those who are on the, you know, very, very ignorant platform, try to keep them away from polluting other sampradayas that I have read. So Lord Shiva is always in charge, you know, he's in crematoriums, he's in charge of, you know, the hobgoblins, they're, you know, insanely looking creatures out there. And he gradually purifies them by his potency to the point where they'll be able to start on a path. So his service is very, very difficult. So they serve Lord Shiva, who is a Vaishnava, and they get some benefit. And that is enough for them to start on a bona fide path of connecting with Krishna. So Lord Shiva himself never proclaims to be the greatest demigod or the greatest this or that. He's his own tattva. And that tattva, it has a specific service. And we see, as you're saying, the reciprocation between Lord Shiva and Lord Krishna. Lord Shiva is always, he resides in Vrindavan. He takes different forms as a gopi in Vrindavan. He guards the holy dam. And he's able, in his different forms, to take part in Krishna's pastimes. Krishna himself had this sweet pastime after the churning of the milk ocean. In the purport, I remember Srila Prabhupada explaining how, you know, Lord Vishnu was there. The demigods could have just easily approached him, but he told them to go and approach Lord Shiva. He's the one who will help them deal with the poison coming out of the churning of the milk ocean. So the Lord is very affectionate to Lord Shiva, and he glorifies him in different ways. Even when Lord Shiva wanted to see the bewildering potency of the Lord, and he manifested his Mohini Murti form, just so that that reciprocation with Lord Shiva could be, then his devotee can be satisfied. So his duty, his service is to gradually purify those who are on the lowest level so that they can gradually at one point take up a bona fide path and become attracted to Krishna. So I don't know, Krishna is definitely impressed with Lord Shiva's service because he has all these wonderful dealings with him. And sometimes Srila Prabhupada would say that in the temple there should always be a seat for Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, because wherever the Lord is, Lord Shiva is always coming to hear about his glories. So there's a special relationship there with the Lord. Yes,
um,
Okay, I'm trying to understand the last part. So Lord Shiva.
Like Lord Shiva, I think it is Vaishnava.
Yep.
So on one sense, it is said that the devotee of my devotee is my devotee.
Mm.
So if we understand from that point of view, so the devotee of Shiva is the greatest Vaishnava.
Okay, I get your point. So we could easily put it in the box of, okay, Lord Shiva is a devotee, so those who worship Lord Shiva, they also become devotees automatically. But if we analyze and see, in this day and age, those who say that they're actually worshipping Lord Shiva, they are just imitating and they're not following in the footsteps. So Lord Shiva is always, you know, he chants Ram Ram Hari Hari. He has his mala, although he's chanting sometimes, it looks like on the left hand, he's always chanting the names of Ram. And he's always accepting service on behalf of his Lord and Master. He never proclaims himself to be superior. Whereas if we see the followers now, some of them, they imitate Lord Shiva in terms of what he does, how, you know, dressing up in ash, taking intoxication. That's not really following in his footsteps. His position in general, it's a very difficult tattva to understand. I'm not even going to try to go there. But his tattva is very, very unique. It is very difficult to understand. It's an elevated tattva. So, those who say, you know, being a devotee of a devotee means we don't generally just jump and think that we directly worship Krishna. That we always have the guidance of the seniors. We always have the Diksha Gurus, the Shiksha Gurus. So we serve them in connection to Krishna. So we always understand that I am a servant of the servant of Krishna. So Lord Shiva, his lifestyle is very different. However, his mood and his service is specifically done for the pleasure of Krishna. So we worship, you could say we worship Lord Shiva in the sense that we follow in his footsteps in the way that he himself accepts that he also has a master, and that is Krishna. And he's doing this difficult service for his pleasure. So we follow suit, we understand. We are doing everything here for the pleasure of Sri Sri Radha Vallabha, and we are engaged by the Lord's devotees in the temple. And we follow in that mood. So similarly, with Lord Shiva, or even following the footsteps of Lord Brahma, who is the founder of the Sampradaya, he sang the Brahma Samhita, where he accepts that the Supreme Ishvara is Krishna, and he glorifies him in so many different ways. So it's an impetus for us as well to go internal and also glorify the Lord and use those prayers that were given by, you know, the advanced soul, the previous acharyas, to also glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So following the footsteps is not so much about imitating what exactly they do, but in their service to the Lord. Okay, I've gone over time. Thank you very much. Please forgive me. I knew Rupa was meant to give class, but he's not here, and I just walked in. So please forgive me if it was a bit all over the place. I hope you took something from it and that you can meditate on throughout the day. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Shri Prabhupada ki.